Today on Surfing the Quicksand, I'm introducing you to a woman who found herself in a professional journey that suddenly needed to change due to situations kind of out of her control. And she took the opportunity to say, "What do I really want? What am I really good at? What brings me energy? And can I take a risk?" It's another midlife leap story, and this one is with Gina Desconnais. She's going to be very interesting to people who are thinking about what they really need in their life at this moment when opportunities start to knock. I'm Kathy Vines. Welcome to Surfing the Quicksand. If you know my story, or if you don't, I'm someone who had 20 years in corporate human resources. I grew up knowing I wanted to be in HR. It was personnel at the time, but I knew I wanted to be in HR. And I started my career and really had a great vision of where I'd be 20 years out of graduate school. And that came around, and I realized I had no vision for what 21 years would look like. And so that really started a big reflection on my part and a shift to say, what do I want in my life? How do I want to cast my professional impact? Who do I want to work with? How do I want to help them? All of those things in this early 40s critical time where life is getting heavier, dealing with parents and aging parents, and I'm married, and all of these things are so much more complicated than I ever dreamed it would have been 20 years earlier. I'm really grateful that I was able to start over and pivot and pilot a lot of different things, many of which I'm still doing today, including launching a podcast. But I know that my story is not uncommon with people who started out in a career and then found themselves 20 years something into it and saying, wait a minute. Is this all it is? Is this what I'm going to be for the next 20? And in that vein is my guest today, who has gone through a similar story, also kind of in the HR space. So my guest today is Gina Desconnais, and she is an organizational leadership advisor. She's an executive coach, but she comes out of 20 years in kind of big name organizations, helping them with organizational development and shaping their people and their culture. Companies like Strava, Boston Beer Company, Tuck School of Business at Dartmouth, big, big names and big, important organizations where culture really matters. And she found herself in a similar situation saying, what's coming next for me? I don't think it's what I've been doing. And I thought that her story is inspiring and really interesting to me. So I know it's going to be to the rest of you. Welcome, Gina. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. It's so much fun to get to know we're about to have this conversation, Kathy. So looking forward to
Well, I want to start with the context I was just sharing, right? Like, where did you start? So, give us kind of where have you been professionally prior to this stage?
Sure. So I always like to say that I'm one of those people that, my career isn't this linear line with perfectly planned and organized steps. It is a zigzaggy line of dots that, if you draw a through line through them, the through line has been I've been really attracted to organizations that are focused on building or growing businesses, including Tuck, who is growing people who could grow businesses, and also a seeking out ways that I could learn and grow and expand how I think about things. Lifelong learning is my number one strength on the values in action indices from the University of Pennsylvania. And that's just a pattern is I love to find new situations where I can grow and learn. And so I would say throughout my career, what have I done? I started in strategic communications for a really neat company called Robinson Lear in Montgomery. That was my before business school role. After business school, I actually worked as a substitute teacher, which is another track, but I graduated in 2001. It was a really crazy time to graduate. Built a lot of resilience because it was a really difficult job market, much like the one I think that grads are finding themselves in today. I worked as a chief of staff. And then at for AOL Time Warner for Ken Novak, which was a wonderful leader to work for. Then I worked for a company called Business Intelligence Advisors, where I did client development and relationship management with hedge funds. And again, it was a really growing company. I was the ninth employee. When I left, there were 50, which was really a cool and exciting experience to help build something. But the heart of my career, I spent at Tuck. I was at Tuck for 13 years. I wore a gazillion different hats. I did fundraising, friend raising. I ran marketing. I was the dean's chief of staff. And when I left, I was doing planning and operations as associate dean. I loved being in this container of learning. I loved being a leader. I grew up there. I got a second Tuck education. I got my MBA at Tuck, but working there, I think I learned how to be a leader of people and teams and helped others do that. But you know, I hit a point there where, and there's a pattern now as you get into, I was, how old was I when I left there? I mean, I was like early to mid 40s, where you start to hit this thing. It's like, wait, is this, I've climbed this ladder. I was an associate dean. It was a dream. But I was starting to feel like that growth, that learning that I was seeking, I didn't see where else I was going to be able to find it. I helped start a company called Connection 101. It's now called Connection Labs with two women. That was a phenomenal experience. Pivoted, worked at Boston Beer as director of leadership and development. That was an exciting pivot for me to leap from higher ed into go back to corporate work, but got to really lean into this passion and love for leadership and development. Then did that at Strava, which was, as I love to run. It was this great intersection of what my passion for running and the outdoors and how that helps us all be better human beings. And that was a great experience because the founder of that company was my professor of entrepreneurship at Tuck. So just a phenomenal experience. But then,
Stop a
so go ahead.
second.
I'll stop.
I
Sure.
know what Strava is because my
Sure.
husband's a junkie. Can you explain what Strava is for the people who don't know what that is? Because it's
Sure.
very much a you either know it or you don't kind of company.
Definitely. So Strava is a social media platform that's designed for athletes, and it allows you to track your running, especially it's really great for running, for riding, for things that take you out in the world onto the trails or on the roads, and you can track your runs and your rides and all the, juicy data that comes with it. But the best part is you also do that as part of a community of others. And Michael and Mark's, founding words were what we can achieve together is greater than what we can achieve on our own. And so having that supportive community around you, which is very much something, you mentioned earlier. I'm drawn to communities and cultures, and that was a really, really great place to be.
Good. Thank you. I just
Sure.
I know how aligned it is with your personal goals and your personal life. So we don't
Yeah.
all get to go work for a company that's also a product that we use and love and are an ambassador for.
Yes, which is, I think, a really exciting and meaningful opportunity. And it can be challenging when you are in a place that is so tightly aligned. I would say Tuck was this for me as well, this focus on learning and growing and creating just a container for just delicious learning and stimulation and stretching in your growth space. But then when you realize for you that you're no longer maybe getting what you need out of that organization, it can be difficult to leave organizations like that because they become somewhat part of your DNA and what you're known for. And I would say both times I left those organizations, I left with some bittersweet sense of, wow, this is a place that has really given me so much and shaped me. And it is a time for me to move in a different direction for my own flourishing.
Yeah, I had a similar experience. I worked at Millennium Pharmaceuticals, which is now Takeda. But I was there kind of 98 to 2003, real, again, kind of that heyday. You just kind of described the early 2000s, what was going on in that market then. And it was such a special time and such a special culture and company. I still have core friends that I work with. In fact, I just went out to dinner last week with the people I used to work with there. We still meet every year. But it became hard to leave because I felt very much at one with the culture, but I recognized for sure I had outgrown what it could be for me professionally,
Mm-hmm.
and I knew it was going to be up to me to make the difficult decision to say, if I want to continue to grow, I have to prioritize that discomfort of leaving a place I
Yes.
love over kind of, oh, but this is, it really feeds my soul in a lot of ways. So I feel like that kind of choice and time resonates with me.
100%. And to get a little bit academic and nerdy for a minute. So I got my doctorate in education right around, I started it right before I left Tuck, and there was a class on organizational theory, which, as you might imagine, I ate up with, like ice cream in a bowl with a big spoon. And there's a Bowman and Diehl wrote this, organizational theory book, and there's four theories of organization. One is called the HR theory, interesting enough. And what I find really helpful about this theory is it is that there can come a moment when the needs of the individual and the needs of the organization no longer match. And it's sort of like that book, He's Just Not That Into You, where it's like it's not personal. It's just sometimes the two people could be really great, but they're just not a right match. And I think what you described and what I've experienced is you can be with this incredible partner or person that, or this organization that's been so meaningful to you, but then you suddenly realize you're no longer able to grow in the ways you need. It also happens the other way, as you and I have both experienced working in the people space. Sometimes organizations no longer need the talents of a human being because they know either no longer need someone at the high level or that certain level or whatever. I think it depersonalizes it a little bit and helps you move through what can be challenging times of change.
I think I used to use two different, again, where you and I are on video, so people who are listening can't see our hands moving, but I would use kind of the idea, number one, of like two fingers together and like separating out, and one starts to veer off and say, that separation always happens, and a smart person sees it when it's early and makes the strategic move for themselves. And the other is I would refer to as a teeter-totter, right? Like there are going to be times where you and your company are not really in balance, and it comes and it goes. And it's when one feels really tipped for too long a time and you can't get it back into equilibrium, that's that time to say, I don't think the environment's going to change for me. It's got to be me changing.
Totally. I love that you use a teeter-totter analogy because I also use a teeter-totter analogy, but in a different way. So now I'm glad to have a second teeter-totter analogy.
And I'm assuming teeter totters are still a thing. I don't have little kids, so I assume those are still around. So we kind of came to you were with Strava, you were in that spot, you were kind of recognizing that you weren't learning in the same way and you weren't feeling that growth. So where does that take you at this point in time?
Yeah, so sometimes the universe gives us great gifts. And the universal gift I received was that Strava was emphasizing in-person work, which many organizations are doing. And I understand why the company made that choice. They wanted to create more of a sense of community in the San Francisco office and other office spaces. Living in Vermont, I do not live in a metro area. And so it just became clear that it wasn't going to be a long-term play that was going to be great for either side. And so, about a year ago, like a little more than a year ago, it became time to leave Strava. And I faced a challenge to say, what am I going to do next? And at first, there was this very juicy opportunity with an organization that I had been part of previously that seemed exciting that came my way. It was a different kind of role, but with an organization I know, I'd rather not go into the details of that. And I threw myself into it. I was engaged in a search, so it seemed like, oh wow, I found this job that was going to be my new dream job, interviewing for it. As things went along, I wound up being the runner-up of that job search, found that out in December. But in parallel, I had Because I wanted to, I've always had this dream of having my own practice. And so I started an LLC pretty quickly after I left Strava so I could start doing some coaching. I'd had some former colleagues who said, "Will you please be my coach? I'm really excited to work with you." So I started doing that just a little bit to play. And a really pivotal moment happened during the interview process where a good friend of mine said, "Hey, I'd really love for you to come to my offsite and do a motivational talk and workshop with my sales team." And I just think you would be great, and I'd love to have you do that. And the week that I was waiting to hear about the job, I did the talk at her firm. And I remember being in this room and feeling, I'm in a class with Tara Moore called Playing Big, and she talks about two types of fear. There's pakad, which is like the fear, that's the anxious fear that we feel sometimes, but there's this one called yiras, which is this mix of fear and awe when we're approaching doing something that we know is something that we actually really, really want. And there's kind of that like exhilaration and fear that can be sometimes push us away, but also kind of draw us in to doing something. And as I stood up there doing my talk and engaging with the organization, I felt yiras. I now can see that I have a word for it. And afterward, one of her colleagues came up to me and said, like, you're really good at what you do. This is, wow, I really enjoyed being with you. So I just, that moment came. A couple of days later, I found out I didn't get the job. I did go into a period of, wow, I now don't know what I'm doing. We depend a lot on my income in my family. I went for some jogs that were full of tears to really process, like, where am I going? What am I doing? And it was my husband, Archer, who is my best cheerleader in the planet, maybe other than my mom, who said, you've always wanted to do your own thing. This is your time. Like, step into your power, your purpose, go for it. You have my support. We'll do what it takes if we need to borrow money to help us get through, but I believe in you. I know you can do this. And that was what I needed. I needed to know that he would be okay with this uncertain time, and to give it a try. And the worst case scenario was I try, it doesn't work, and I find myself back in the process of looking for a job. And here we are a year later, and I'm in my right place and happy to chat more about that. But yeah.
I what I love about that kind of season, this short season that you talked about, where things started to pivot, where things that I've heard as I've been interviewing other people, one is someone else saw your potential in a way you weren't necessarily viewing yourself, right? So we sometimes learn so much about how other people see us and think of us in our greatness that we just take for granted. It's just, well, this is what who people are and what we do. So you had that. And by the way, she had an opportunity to give you to get you shine. And then, as you said, kind of the support of your spouse to say, we can be risk takers. We can see where this goes. We have opportunities that'll kind of help us support for a little bit if we need it. And worst case scenario, you find yourself where you already are.
It really resonates what you said about how others can see our potential before we sometimes do. I think, Colleen is my friend who hired me. I incredible gratitude for her moment. I think about Michael Horvath, who was the founder of Strava and who was my professor. He is and still, he was and still is one of those people for me where he saw that potential in me in school and has over the last 20 years. And there are just those people are, if there's advice I would give anyone is find those people in your life because they give you power. They help, they give us this energy to go for the thing that we really want to do that we can be slightly afraid of for really valid reasons.
I think it's a great advice, and I think about people in two ways, right? One, who are the people in my life who have been those people, but also, where do I know I actively seek to be that person for people who've come behind me, right? I have a a list of a few. What's coming to mind is women. There are probably men in there too, but women who have just said, you are someone I'm always going to keep an eye on. You are someone I will, anytime you ask, can I be a reference? Absolutely. Anytime you say, can I bounce this off? I'm always going to be that person. And I work hard to stay and stay present in their lives so they never really question that. It's really been an important value of mine.
Mine too, and interestingly, I think that many of the people who have been that for me have been men, and yet many of the people who I choose to do it for and have just kind of organically have been women, probably because I would have loved to have that kind of sponsorship from women in my own career. I think things have really evolved in the last, well, since you and I started our careers, but like a shout out to the men who can be and have been for me great sponsors. And also shout out to the young women coming up. I just admire them so much.
I agree. And I'm thinking about just my age, right? So I entered the workforce more than 30 years ago. There weren't a lot. The prevalence of women, I don't even mean like senior level women, just the women head, there weren't as many. There tend to be more in HR for sure, but I don't know that that's most people's experience. So to some extent, my exposure of who was there for me was a function of the economy at the time. And now really being able to say how have Gen X women been able to be the bridge towards millennial and younger folks to say we want to be better air cover for you than we had for ourselves.
Absolutely. And I'm really into this idea of intergenerational mentorship. And so I see, and it's there are boomer women and boomer men who have been incredible mentors to me. I also see, though, how Gen X, I think we have two chances here. One is we tried, there's two things. We tried to do the we can have it all thing. And I think the millennial women are intergenerationally mentoring up to us to say, hey, wait a minute, that was nuts. Like, how are you going to find more balance for yourself in a way that is allows you to be whole and to allow yourself to lean into some of our more, I don't like using this gendered word, but like our feminine energy or our yin energy. That's one thing. But I do think our generation is going to help demystify and destigmatize menopause.
We are, yeah, no, we are
So,
killing that. We are leading that
yeah.
champion. I've said this many times. We are, first of all, we are the first generation to have social media before, during, and after our menopause journey as a generation, right? So we have the ability to connect and learn and educate and share and be vulnerable. And we will be making things better for generations to come. I'm grateful for it. And so I think you're right. I think the fact that those younger generations are helping us say, like, really, these are your life choices? Are you sure? You don't have to do it that way. And right, so much about the Gen X coming up was, of course, this is how you do it because this is how it's always been done. You're entering an institution, so you follow the institution rules. And I work, especially when I work with younger folks in my career coaching practice. I'm just like, gosh, yeah, you do this. You go ne negotiate for all that time off. Good for you. I could never do it, but like, boy, you do it. I got you. That's great. Like they have it right. And I'm
It
jealous for them and I'm glad for them.
is. Me too. Well said.
So we digress. Let's come back to you. So you've had this great experience. You've had some tearful jogging and you're really kind of coming into, oh gosh, I really kind of loved this. How does it go from I have support and I've had one good experience with Colleen and I know the other opportunity is off the table to building a vision for what could come.
I love this. It's so fun to talk about. So, couple things. So, when I made the decision to commit, it was like, okay, I'm going all in. I believe strongly in coaches. I hired a business coach, and Johanna was really helpful to me in helping to map out what is it you want to accomplish? What is your vision for the business? How do you want to get there? And helping me create some of those concrete steps. Could I have done it on my own? Sure. I loved having a thought partner. That's how I thought of her. And she could help me see things with objectivity that both positively and constructively that I might miss on my own. And so I, as a coach, often talk about it's a designing your life idea where it's set a low bar and clear it, where what is the next small step you can take to keep making progress? And so that was my mantra for the first 3 months is like, okay, first, what is it? I started with the coaching. Then, one of my next steps was, okay, I need to get and I want to get a corporate engagement. I knew I wanted to be able to do some of the leadership development work I really enjoyed doing in tandem with doing one-on-one coaching. And so it was focusing on how am I going to do that? I focused on networking. I have an incredible network of human beings that I started working with and reaching out to. And as I like to say, it was planting seeds. So I was planting seeds in my garden, and you have to be patient when you plant those seeds because they don't instantly turn into a beautiful, blossoming tomato plant overnight. Is you have to water it and you have to maintain it and have faith in yourself and in what you have to offer. And so I think a big pivotal moment was in mid-March, late March. I was introduced through someone I had networked with over the years. His wife was looking for someone who does succession planning, leadership development work. And he said, "You need to talk to her. She's got a project I think would be great for you." And so that was like another inflection point. To make a long story short, I wound up doing some work with them. They're an incredible client. I then got hired to do an offsite by someone in my network. That happened in May. And between those two projects and the coaching, things have just continued to blossom. And it takes a lot of discipline and patience with the process. So, yeah, I'll stop there.
I as someone who has started her own business, and I know that there are plenty of people in here who are in that same situation who I've had as guests who are listeners. There's this For me, there was kind of a cocktail of things going on in terms of confidence and competence. Early on, it was things like, I'm going to say yeah. If anybody's interested in me, I'm going to say yes, no matter what it is, where it is, and how bad of a fit, because I need to be doing something, I need to be trying something, and I need to get paid, right? So saying yes to the wrong things early on was a bit of a barrier for me. The idea of like, oh, I know what I'm doing this month, but I have no idea what I'm doing next month, and that's terrifying, right? Is this a flash, or is this a long-term journey? I don't know yet, right? So I was really struggling with some of those things, as I'm also like, by the way, this is not a hobby for me. I need to be making money. I need to be reestablishing a career. There was an aspect of privilege in my life that I was in a situation where we were financially secure enough and we had benefits through my husband that I could do the risky while he does the stable. But that wasn't for me permission to not be successful.
So I can definitely relate to that. I don't want to paint a picture that this has been all sunshine and roses. There have been days and weeks where it was a little bit, sweat on the brow, concern around, wow, how are we going to string together these things and make this work? And I went back to thinking about what are the ways that I know have helped me get to where I am today. It was planting more seeds in the garden. It was talking about what I was doing with new people or with my network. Say, hey, did you know I did this offsite and it went really well? It was also leaning on my team, Awesome, my peer group that I work with that helps. We help each other just talk about career challenges, and it's like a peer coaching group. But I like to pretend that it has been all easy street would be a complete lie. It is part of the roller coaster of being an entrepreneur. And it's also not focusing on the fear or this scarcity mindset, because I think that's when I know I lose creativity and I lose confidence. It's reminding myself I can do this, I am doing this, and to have faith in what's going to come. And I found the more I shifted into that faith, not blind faith, and not, I don't mean like manifest, I'm gonna have a Porsche land in my yard or something like that, but more visualizing what is it I want to achieve and how am I gonna get there, gave me the strength to keep going through those harder moments.
Yeah, and to be clear, Porsches are just not a practical choice for Vermont. But the idea, I think I do feel like it's that you talked about a couple of different things that are kind of patterns and themes I hear when I've spoken to people who have made big changes in their 40s and 50s around having that faith. Again, not blind faith, not like, oh, I think I could be an astronaut if I really, if I just believe in myself. Like there isn't a just believe myself into a lot of solutions at this age. But also that being able to embrace abundance instead of scarcity and the excitement instead of fear. If you are really kind of fixed in a fear space, it's really hard to imagine how you're going to create from a position you've never been in before. You have to feel like you are capable of architecting as you go and be okay with the discomfort of not knowing where you're going to be.
Yes, I don't know if you do yoga ever, but I think about in yoga, you'll be in a pose sometimes. And, there's some poses where you could hang out in that pose all day because it just feels dreamy. And there's other poses where you're in it and you are in the discomfort. And I think the true, philosophical learning of yoga is not, can I sustain myself physically through the pose, but it's, can I be in this discomfort and be okay and get move through that discomfort and realize I made it and I can do it. And I think entrepreneurship is sometimes a lot like yoga.
And not even entrepreneurship. I think a lot about midlife, right?
Midlife,
What
totally.
you just
Yes.
described is can I think appeal to anyone listening, regardless of whether or not they're hanging up a shingle. They are stuck. They are in discomfort. They are in a space where there isn't necessarily an end in sight in easy ways coming through them, whether that's personal or professional. I want to talk a little bit about personal, right, for you. What give us kind of a backdrop of, because we talked about, gee, I'm not learning. I'm not, the high level. I'm not learning. They want me to come back to San Francisco, time to make a change. But that's all just kind of on the surface of your professional chart. Tell me about personal, what life is like going on in this time.
So I would say the universe, the gift of saying it's time to make a change came at a really pivotal personal moment in two ways. I have two strong, beautiful, incredible teenage daughters, one who's a senior in high school and the other is a sophomore. And I have an 87-year-old mother who we had to relocate to assisted living in March of this past year. And so the flexibility and agency that came with this decision I made to work on my own has given me capacity, both of time, of emotional space to, my brother and I were Team Jeanette, that's my mom, from March until May when through the end of May she had kind of a health blip. She's doing much better now, but I was all in with my mother. While I was, trying to cultivate this work. And I was really delighted to have more space to be able to be present with my children. I am someone who, when I'm in my career, can be all in and all in beyond the capacity that can be great as, being present with my family. I'm really appreciating that I'm able to set different boundaries for myself in my new life that allow me to be more present for the people who mean so much to me.
I love that. And again, I find, as we've discussed, right, as a caregiver with parents in their 80s, and they're living well and independently and a few miles away from me now, but it's very much a daily presence in my life, and medical appointments, sometimes scheduled, sometimes emergent, and one of those things that have come up for me was when I first started my business, I had a cancellation policy and I cared about it and I enforced it. And what I really have come to know later is like, you know what? I can't really, in good conscience, put that out there because I know I might be the person who has to cancel on a moment's notice because it's time to take a trip to urgent care, right? So understanding those conditions around the flexibility that we need and we don't always get is important at this age, at this stage. I don't even say age. I think the idea of you're able to work a lot, working maybe beyond capacity or working to excess compared to what other things you want to achieve in life. One of the things I tell people when they're changing jobs, right? Even if they're not doing something crazy, is the best gift of starting a new job is you get to recast Boundaries and expectations other people should have of you, because it's not based on, well, I've been here 3 years and they know that I'll work late even if they ask, because I always say yes, right? The patterns we've gotten ourselves into that have brought about negative impact to our lives and our ability to balance our life, that we've done to ourselves for the most part, we get that chance with each fresh start to say, based on who I am today, based on my needs today, how am I going to do this differently?
Such wisdom in what you just said, and I am doing that more. I would say I'm shy of perfect, which is okay because perfect is the enemy of the good. But here's an example is I think I used to be, oh, I can meet you at any time, or very flexible because I wanted to be available to the teams that I worked with. I am not as available as I used to be. I'm still quite available, according to I have someone who works with me to help me with my business operations, and she's always like, you don't have to make this much time available to all of your clients. Like it's okay to block time for yourself or to hold a boundary. It's a good reminder that of how I have a pattern of seeking to meet needs and please needs, and how that though doesn't lead to a place that I feel my best at.
During the pandemic, early pandemic, one of the things that I did was I really expanded the hours I was available for Zoom clients, right? I had clients who were, they were homeschooling with their kids during the day, all sorts of things. So I opened up my calendar to be open 4 weeknights, in addition to my normal business hours, Monday to Friday, kind of normal East Coast hours, 4 weeknights a month up until 9 p.m. Right, I got West Coast people, I got East Coast people, and everything. And I did this for a long time. And literally, I think it was year three where I was like, "Oh, I don't think I n not only don't think I need to do this anymore, but more importantly, like I don't. This is no longer sustainable for me to give so much to accommodate people." And the way it works, people can get on my calendar. They go look on my calendar link and like, oh, Kathy's available Tuesday at 8. Great, that works for me. But they don't necessarily realize like, okay, well now I'm not doing anything Tuesday at 7 and Tuesday at 6 because I got to stay alert for you at 8, right? So people don't know that. All they know is Kathy said if she's available, she's available. So I really had to struggle with what am I Ooh, like I call it values in conflict when I see kind of that discomfort, right? On one hand, I want to make sure that I am always available for the people who need it because I know how important it is that they've made this investment in working with me. And on the other hand, I need to protect my own mental health and physical health. And I'm just not as good at 8 p.m. to give thoughts as I used to be, right? So really navigating through those moments of values in conflict have allowed me to, re-articulate what does it mean to be successful? Because it's today what I define as success isn't what it was 5 years ago and wasn't 13 years ago. Share with me your thoughts on that.
I have been thinking a lot about it's as we approach the end of a year, I've been thinking about what is this step has it meant for me, and it has been about defining success on my own terms. And I think when I think about some of the behaviors that were served me well in my career, in many ways, in the sense that I gave everything, and that would lead to more opportunities, more challenges, promotions, advancement. But I wasn't always prioritizing myself or the things that were most important to me. And I was defining success on, can I get to this next level? Can I get to this next job? Can I get, this title? I don't define success on my title or my achievements in that way. Right now, I define my success on, am I doing work that I truly enjoy for clients that I find just, are helping me grow and that I know I'm helping them? That allows me to have the flexibility to go watch Annabelle's soccer game or Eliza's volleyball game on the days that I want to do it and not have to tell anyone that I can't. It's having time to have coffee with my husband in the morning. It's going to see my mom once a month. It's like having this time. And I'm deciding. I get to decide. And that is we talked about privilege earlier. It is a privilege. Like, I think I wake up every day with a lot of gratitude that I have found a way to build a life where the success that I have defined for myself meets my ability to support my family in a way that works. And this is defining success for what Gina needs and what Gina needs to be the Gina she wants to be in all aspects of her life, instead of just Gina who's trying to crush it at work.
I love that. And I think that invitation around gratitude is so important. And I don't, anybody who's struggling benefits from kind of inviting in gratitude, and I don't care on what front you're struggling. And I'm reminding myself all the time. And I honestly, I one of the things, and we're gonna switch to the quicksand three in a
Sure.
second, because those are the three questions I ask everyone. But I'm always so pleased at how often I hear people mention kind of having a practice of gratitude or journaling, writing as some core ways that they're staying grounded. Let's switch. Let's jump into this. So, the first question I ask folks are, what is a trick or technique that you use to get yourself going to face something you've been avoiding?
So I have two. If that's okay. So one is the one that's called eat the frog, if you've ever heard, which is when you have something you need to do, you just do it first thing before anything else. For me, my energy is best after I've had coffee and a run. So if I plop it in that section and just to say I'm going to do it, I put it on my calendar and I just commit to doing it. The second is a more like play with my mind motivational one, which is I get to do something that I really enjoy doing as a reward for completing the thing. So right now I'm trying to reinforce my meditation practice, and I'm trying to use running, which is something I will do every day and I have to do, or exercise, not just run. I place it after that practice. So I get to do the run if I do my 5 minutes of meditation.
I love that. And the Eat the Frog, that's a book, I think, by a man named Brian Tracy. And it's really that it's such a simple book, and I'll put the link in the show notes for that, of like, just you say, like, do the ugly thing first, just get it done, right? And for so it's so easy to use that as a way to beat procrastination. But even the idea of knowing reward, I call it, are you a carrot person or stick person, right? Do you need the reward to be your motivator or the punishment to be your motivator? Know that about yourself, and building up a system is tremendously effective. I love that.
I'm absolutely a carrot person.
Gotcha. Second question, if skills, money, time in history, location, if none of those were a factor, what's a career or a job you might have liked to have tried?
It would be a combination of fitness instructor and dancer slash singer, like some not in my head job, but I love to dance. I love to exercise and I love to sing. Now, am I really awesome at any three of those things? That is for debate. But I love using my exuberant energy to move my body and to sing. And so I would be like a singer, dancer, exercise instructor.
I think a lot of people would like that class.
Yes. Yeah. It'd be a singing while
Right.
exercising and dancing
Yes.
class,
Yes.
maybe.
If you give me a minute after this, I'm going to come up with a fun pun around karaoke that's going to tie right in, and we'll trademark it, and you're going to be off.
Awesome. I love karaoke.
And the third is, what is a way that you recharge or hit the reset button when life gets chaotic?
I have so I movement in nature. So, like abundant, joyful movement in nature is hands down my favorite way to recharge, and I try to do it as many days as possible. So that can look like a run in the trails. It can look like a hike with my dogs. It can look like skiing in the wintertime. Anything outside, I find enormous peace when I am outside in these Vermont woods and just green sights that I get to see. I also like doing creative things. So on the weekend, I like to like make soup. I like the chopping, that like rhythm of making soups or things that, are just nourishing. Or sometimes I like to try to knit or paint or do things like something, just again, it's getting out of my head.
Yeah, and both of those sound like you get out of your head really well. I'm a crafty person. I'm a puzzler. A lot of different ways, but it is that of just when I'm doing those things, I'm really not thinking about anything else. And I do think that that's part of why I do love them. I love being able to kind of create a thing that's a physical thing that's so much more valuable to me than than other ways that people create. But it is really around like, oh, I need to get my brain focused on something very different for a while. Either because it's recharging or because I'm working through something and I need to kind of let things proceed without the noise. Good. Gina, this is so great. I'm so pleased that we've had this opportunity to get to know you better, and I can introduce you to the Surfing the Quicksand family. I want to give people an idea of where to learn more about you. I know you've got a website, I know you've got a Substack, and I've got lots of things.
Sure.
So share more about that.
Yeah. So I have a website. It's www.leadwithgina.com. And then I also have a Substack, which is also called Lead with Gina. I think it's substack.leadwithgina.com. And I do a mix of writing, and I've been playing with audio on there as well. But both are great places to catch me, or on LinkedIn, Gina Desconiers. There's not too many Gina
I can't
Desconiers.
imagine. Right. So I'll put all of those links in the show notes here. So if people are inspired to learn more about you or reach out, they can do that real quickly. Good.
Awesome. Well, it's been such a pleasure, Kathy. I loved our conversation today. Thank you for inviting me to be on your awesome podcast.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
I think the lessons that Gina was able to express around what she's been going through over the last year and a half through changes at work, changes in life, really recasting what it means to her to build a professional journey that she can continue to learn and grow and work with great people. I really think the core is at that part we got to at the end, right? About redefining success as a function of today and today's measurements and knowing that what we used to use for measurements of just success just don't hold water at every age. It takes a lot of bravery, I think, to say, whoa, stop. I need to really think about what matters most to me now and how I'm going to recast success and to take those little steps, those, little leaps to move forward and reassure yourself, reassure yourself that, yeah, I'm on the right path. I don't need to know where I'm going just yet, but I'm feeling like I'm on the right path. I'm so glad I got to introduce Gina to you. I hope you're able to check out her website, Lead with Gina, and her Substack and some of her writing. And if you know somebody who's like Gina and been a great example of somebody who's changed their professional career in their 40s or 50s to be something that's much more aligned with their professional purpose, I'd love an introduction. I'd love to share more stories like this with the Surfing the Quicksand family. Thanks so much.